I was reading an article about some of the things that you're doing at the university, talking about confronting microaggression. And I had never heard the term before. Mm-hmm. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about what microaggression refers to and how you're addressing it?
Microaggressions are those big and little things that happen every day to women, to folks of color, to folks with disabilities, and people in the LGBT community. They're the little things that sort of make you go, ah, I don't feel connected here, or I feel disconnected, or just downright offensive. And there are different levels of microaggressions. It's a term coined by faculty at Columbia University, my alma mater, and it's so real for our students. And, you know, certainly as a woman, there have been many times where I go into a space and feel like, wow, I don't fit here, I don't belong. And the people, the things that they say and do make that happen. Those are microaggressions.
Can you give an example?
Little things like you throw like a girl. Well, actually, I throw pretty hard and yeah, like a girl. So that might be an example, you know, for a young person. So an example of a curricular microaggression, an assignment might be to research an ancestor in the 1940s using the U.S. Census. And this happened to one of my neighbors who happens to be Hmong. And she doesn't have an ancestor who lived in the United States in the 1940s. So she had to pick an alternate person, which is fine, and that was a fine alternate assignment, but instantly she feels like she isn't part of the group because she can't do that. She has to do something alternate. So the way in which we other one another, and those are the microaggressions. And then the very flagrant ones, like using inappropriate words. We've had a number of those negative incidents where things have been written on whiteboards or on some of the anonymous social media sites like Yik Yak. People have put offensive things related to culture, like Asian food smelling, those kinds of things. There's no place in our community to make people feel like they don't belong. So the work that we're doing with our Macro Chats on Microaggression project is to really shine a spotlight on the things that make people feel like they don't fit and belong. Part of it is just awareness. Some of the things we say and do, we learned from our parents and our grandparents, and we learned from society, and those things can be hurtful. So just to shine a spotlight on them, we're about to launch a campaign related to language, my choice, and the word that I picked for my slide that will be a part of the campaign is bossy. You know, if girls and women are assertive and directive and driven, they're bossy. And if a man is those things, he's a leader. And so I've just chosen to take the word bossy out of my vocabulary. And so this My Language, My Choice campaign, which is actually we are using from one of our alumni who is at a university in Washington, allowed us to use her campaign. And it's such a really well done campaign. So we're excited to launch it on the campus in the fall.
I want to toss one out to you, and I'm just curious how microaggressions can be used against, I guess you say, majorities as well. Although I understand that now the campus is about 60% of the students are female. Is that true?
Yes, that's been true for a long time.
So actually now males are the minority there. And as a male and a feminist male of long standing, I became aware along the way of some of the ways that identities, what you just said about if a woman is assertive, she's being bossy and it's a negative trait, you know, as opposed to a man who's good and assertive. One of the things I became aware of is that if a woman is involved in a war and dies, it's a tragedy. If a man dies in war, he's a hero. And I'm just, it's nominally is a title of approbation, of excellence. He died as a hero. But a woman dying, well, that's unfortunate. I'm aware that microaggressions can happen towards males as too. Do you actually hear about those?
Oh, well, certainly, but our social structure is still very dominated by males. So even though in cities that are predominantly the majority of people are people of color, but the power structure is still white. So the institutions are still run by what was previously the majority, and there's that domination. And so it doesn't always hold true.
Well, sure. Yeah. I actually happen to have the wonderful experience of living in West Africa. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Togo.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. In my village, I was the one white person, which is a whole different experience.
Absolutely. Everyone should have that experience, actually. It makes us all better human beings.
I still say I had a position of privilege mm-hmm. because I was relatively rich compared to the folks there. And, you know, they looked up to me because I was educated, et cetera. So it's not the same as being a person of color in a place where you're looked down upon. It wasn't that. But it was, in some cases, even life-threatening to be the white person amongst all of the people in the country where I was.
Sure.